This is the Mormon Expression Podcast. Find us on the web at mormonexpression.com.
Welcome back to another edition of Mormon Expression. I'm your host, John Larson. Tonight, we're joined by three of our regular panelists. First of all, we have George.
Hi, everybody. Nice to be around.
And Jim.
Great to be here.
And Tom.
What's up, guys?
Tonight, we're being joined by another great guest. Brian Dalton is a very multi-talented man. According to the IMDb, he's a cinematographer, director, writer, editor, composer, actor, producer, and casting director. And he's best known for his work, the internet sensation, Mr. Deity. Brian, welcome to Mormon Expression.
Thank you very much. Casting director is a bit much, but you know what? I'm going to take it because the thing I learned in my first movie is that is probably the single most important thing in any project that goes to film. And so I'm taking credit for that one. I'm going to let that one live.
So I gather that when you're not doing Mr. Deity, you run sort of a production company that does film?
Well, right now we're at a point where I'm doing virtually nothing but Mr. Deity in some way, and we're trying to get our other show, Words, back up and running. But yeah, Jimbo and I have been doing video production for years, and that's we met at a film festival. He plays Larry on the show. We met at a film festival, which I won, which was nice. Because he's a street cred, and particularly with him, and he was doing video production, I was doing a little bit of it, and we kind of joined forces, and we have worked together ever since. And in fact, it was on a shoot coming home from Santa Barbara where he talked me into doing this show. So,
well, I think the one thing that sets the show apart from all the other stuff out there is it definitely has high production value, and I think that's led to its success. So.
Which is funny to me because there really is nothing to the production. I mean, it is hard to get that white back. It's a pain, like you wouldn't believe, to get that white background up. But, you know, it's, and well lit and not blowing you out. And we do it poorly sometimes, I feel like. But, you know, the sound is great. And the cameras are, we shoot in HD and, you know, DVC Pro HD, which is a great codec. And it, you know, it looks really good. But it's very little, you know, work, I think. Maybe, you know, that's just, I've been doing it for so long.
Well, it looks good to me, so.
Well, good. Thanks.
All right. So some of our listeners may not have had the pleasure yet of seeing the Mr. Deity films. Maybe you can sort of explain what the project is.
Sure. Mr. Deity is just basically a light comedy with theological overtones that looks at the kind of the day-to-day. The reason I called it Mr. Deity was because it was the everyday workaday God that I wanted to show, who has to deal with the real problems of running a universe. So it's, you know, he's the blue collar kind of guy, but he's blue collar in the sense that it's the universe is run very much like a Hollywood studio. So it's that kind of project, and I've written it with that in mind the whole time, that this is like an indie universe, as I put it in the pilot. It didn't have the budget of the big, you know, good universes where, you know, the ratio of good to evil was, you know, 100 to 1. It's, you know, some trade-offs had to be made, and this is the best he could do on the short notice. And you know, he's the small G God of Mormonism as opposed to the big G God of Aquinas. But he would like to be the big G God. So, you know, he wants to have that in his background. But it's basically just a comical look, and we take issues in the Bible and kind of ask, really? Is this how it went down? You know, and kind of imagine those scenarios.
So I'm just getting introduced to this over the last couple, 3 weeks. This is George. I'd be curious to know who your target audience, your fan, your loyal fans are, what the stereotypical fan of yours is. And then the opposite side, who's your biggest critics? Is it all religions? Is it this particular religion, evangelicals? You know, so both sides, who's your biggest critic, who's your biggest loyal fans?
Yeah. When we started doing it, we really didn't have a target audience. We just kind of put it out there and wanted to see who liked it. A lot of people thought I was going to get just a ton of backlash from the religious community. And I think I would say that religious people, you know, clearly not like super born again evangelical types, but your common religious American, is probably, they probably make up half the fanship, if not more, of the show. So we get an across the board kind of thing, because they just like, they like stuff that makes them think about these bigger questions and these bigger issues, and they like it that it's done in a humorous way. I think I've only gotten one or two pieces of hate mail the whole time I've been doing this, and it's been 3 years. One was a guy who sent me pictures of dead Taliban saying this is how I was going to end up. And the other email, you know, the other hate mail just said you're going to burn in hell.
I noticed that you have a lot of, I guess, more people, guests of the skeptical nature, you know, Byers and Michael Shermer. And that aspect I really enjoy, and getting their name and their word out. And so I just wanted to comment that's really cool that you got to include them.
Well, when I left Mormonism back in 1993, I kind of, you know, grasped at straws, wandering around, figuring out who am I? What am I? What do I think? What do I believe? And I looked into Judaism, couldn't deal with the ethnicity part because, you know, I'm a hardcore American where I don't even know where I'm from. So ethnicity was just so foreign to me. And then I went to Catholicism because I was still thinking, oh, I need my daughter to have, you know, something. And they wouldn't have me because I told them, well, I don't really believe it, but I'd like, you know, to have my daughter. They weren't going for that. That was a very Woody Allen, Hannah and her sisters moment. And then I started looking around and I found Skeptic, which was close to me because I lived in Southern California, and they Meditech. And actually the irony is Dr. Laura turned me on to Skeptic magazine and the Skeptic Society at Caltech there, because she had written an article for one of their things. And back in 93, I was still a Mother Laura loving kind of guy. So I fell in with them. I designed the magazine. I don't know if they've redesigned it since, but I was the one who designed it. I was a graphic designer at the time. And Michael's been a good friend of mine for a long time.
Wow. So. Now, you mentioned you left the church in 1993. That was a seminal year for the church. That was the September 6th and other things going on at BYU, if I remember right.
Yeah, it was the big time for excommunications. Of the September 6th. I had forgotten that they called them that. And I had basically had my fill at that point. I was hanging on by a thread, and when they started excommunicating people, I said, this is Galileo all over here. Particularly D. Michael Quinn upset me, because that's a guy who was just writing good history. And when you write good history, the counter to that is to write good history that contradicts what you've said. And instead of doing that, they excommunicated him, and I thought that was pure evil. So I was gone.
So you resigned?
I wrote my letter of saying, take my name off the records of the church. I handed it to my bishop, and you know, we had a very awkward moment, and that was it.
Wow. So what was your family situation at the time?
My wife's family is still, you know, our Uber Mormons. My family was Mormon. All of my family was Mormon at the time. My dad had grown up Catholic and kind of converted for the peace of the family. And so, ironically, I think he was actually more upset than my mom, because I think it made him feel like, shit, why didn't I do that years ago? Whoops. Sorry. Darn, why didn't I do that years ago? And he has since become an atheist, over the last, 18, 17 years. Not with any necessary nudging of me, but he's had some experiences on his own, which kind of led him in that direction, which is so funny because he was so upset when I left. I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
It was hard because I lost virtually every friend I had, doing that. So at least every Mormon friend I had.
So had you fallen in with the skeptics before or after, or did that kind of happen simultaneously?
No, that was probably about 2 years later.
So you're in California at the time. You sever yourself from Mormonism. What happened next?
Well, like I said, I kind of try. It's one of those things where you kind of, It was ironic because what happened to me is I kind of thought my way out of big G theism first. I was working with Dennis Prager, who's a well-known radio talk show host, nationally syndicated Jewish scholar, and I was working with him, and I, you know, he had a thing where he told you, you know, you always got to know your opposition, the other side of everything. And I was writing something. He had been encouraging me to write a book on my thoughts about God. And I realized I hadn't really ever looked at the other side seriously. And so I went to the library and took out the Atheist Debater's Handbook and got my head blown away by that. The arguments were very powerful and really stated all the arguments that I thought were strong on my side. And I went to him saying, you know, help me, help me. And it became clear to me he'd never really looked at the other side either. And so what I did then was I said, well, okay, well, that's about the big G God, but Mormonism is a little G God, so I'm still okay. And I kept that for a while, but that doesn't really work out theologically. It's not very satisfying in the end. So that's when I kind of, you know, I went off. And then I like I said, I just kind of wandered around, and I realized that there was this group of people called skeptics that I really, really fit in with. You know, not on everything. Certainly, I'm still probably a little more right wing than most skeptics. Certainly, I'm not. No one would probably consider me right wing on the right, but certainly the people on the left consider me far more right wing leaning than maybe the normal skeptic. Or the normal skeptic should be, or, you know, you would think of them that way.
So Brian, this is Tom.
Going back
to the days when you were steep within the Mormon faith, would you have considered yourself very faithful, or do you feel like you had a strong testimony? Did you ever utter the phrase, "I know this to be true"?
I was actually a zealot for many years. I had a transformative experience when I was 17 and became, you know, the Alex P. Keaton of Mormonism. I literally went from having hair down to my waist, the rock and roll, drugs, and God knows what else was going on. I mean, it was a convert that put, you know, St. Paul to shame, and got a lot of love. I did an album in the Mormon community with Lex de Azevedo. And was in with that crowd, and I can't imagine anyone being more into it than I was. I would literally take my scriptures to school after seminary, and then when I had time there, I would read them there. I was a complete zealot for a while.
So you had aspirations to become a bishop or a stake president, huh?
Sure, yeah, something like that. In fact, in my patriarchal blessing said that I would be a bishop and a general authority.
Wow,
that one's not going to happen.
It's not too late.
Yeah, maybe not. Maybe not.
All right. One of the reasons that I really like Mr. Deity, and I know it's circled around sort of the ex-Mormon community for a while, is I see hints of your Mormon theological foundation there.
Right.
Especially the, and you mentioned this, the little G versus the big G God. And, you know, the very fact that God is sort of a corporate, sort of one of those guys up there, and that he's a guy walking around making decisions.
Right. Yeah, it's very much, you know, in the, we have a pilot for a TV show written, in which you find out that, you know, he and Larry were basically working in some other universe's afterlife as post-life counselors. And, you know, they had a surge in the life force that was unexpected, and they have to do something with it. So Mr. Deity's called up to do this indie universe, as it were. And it's kind of my explanation for why things are so crappy here. That if there is some God in charge of it, it's, you know, this poor guy, you know, just got in and had to make a lot of trade-offs, you know, because he wanted intelligent life, and that cost this, and, you know, and there's got to be some explanation why this is such a mess. If, you know, he has all this power and knowledge and blah, blah, blah. And so what you see there is very much the idea of, you know, just a man becoming God kind of thing, or something like that. He's certainly not the God of Aquinas. He is much more of a, you know, a worker bee, as it were, but it's a much bigger hive, as one may say.
Well, and I think, you know, as you think about the universe and God and all the great philosophers come to elements of absurdity. And, you know, I think what Mr. Deity does really well is just sort of hold that absurdity up and just keep it there in the light, you know.
Right.
What does God do all day long? I don't know. And Mr. Deity has to deal with that.
Right. I'm actually working on a book right now called Mr. Deity's Diary. And one of the interesting things, if you actually just stop and think about it, put yourself in his shoes. I have the first chapter is called Sometime Before Time, where Mr. Deity has just existed forever. And you know, what motivates him finally? You know, he's been around forever, if that means anything in a being who doesn't exist inside time. And now suddenly he's just made a decision, I guess, which implies time, by the way, in decision making, that now he's going to create this matter-based object called the universe. And it's, you know, there are all kinds of issues you can deal with it. Was he just lonely? You know, was his self-esteem low and he needed some praise from some beings that could, you know, bow down to him? There's all kinds of fun elements to play with there, because it's really one of those things that people don't think behind a certain, or beyond a certain point when they're thinking about God. They only think of him in relation to us, but think about him just on his own. What is that? Yeah. What goes on there? What's that all like? And what are the inner workings? And how do the decisions that like tsunamis and earthquakes in Haiti, how does that decision get made? Who, you know, that's the kind of stuff that I wanted to think about with Mr. Deity.
You know, Brian, sometimes when I watch some of your clips, I often think there's got to be some religious devout people out there that are actually getting quite offended, you know, because it's quite, you know, some of your skits get pretty blasphemous. Do you, if someone was to give you criticism, like, come on, Brian, I mean, these are cherished beliefs. Why do you have to make fun of it? That's very offensive. What would be your response to that?
Well, I don't think there that anything is off limits in that regard. You know, religious people for the longest time, because they've had the power, have had the ability to say, you don't get to say this, anything about this. Well, we're beyond that. And not only that, not only are we beyond that, but you people are shameful, because when people did say things and you had the power, you put them to death. So you want to talk offensive? I'll give you offensive. Offensive is burning Giuseppe Bruno to death because he said the earth rotated around the sun. That's offensive. What we're doing here is in no way offensive. If you don't want to watch it, you don't have to. We're not shoving it down anybody's throat. It's a fair look. And what I would say most of all is I try to be very, very much consistent with the biblical God, which is why people don't understand. They say, you know, one time he's saying this, another time he's saying that. He doesn't make, well, that's the way it is. If you read the text, I'm just trying to be faithful to that being, that character in the writings. So, I mean, that's, I hope that is a good answer, or at least one you'll take.
Now, early, I can't remember which episode, but in season one, you take on the Book of Mormon directly and talk about the curse. Mr. Deity dismisses the Book of Mormon as being absurd because of the curse of dark skin.
Right.
And you have said elsewhere that the curse of darkness, the darkening of skin, is a central tenet of Mormonism. Maybe you can kind of...
It's the central tenet of Mormonism.
Maybe you can kind of explain that to us a little bit.
You can't have the Book of Mormon. You can't have Mormonism without that idea. Because, as Spencer Kimball said, the whole religion rests on the truth. The central tenet of that book is that God punishes people by darkening their skin. And if you take that out of the Book of Mormon, the Book of Mormon doesn't stand. So you cannot have that idea removed and have any of the religions stand.
Now, hold on a minute. I got to push a little bit on that. I've been studying criticisms of the church for a long time, and I got to admit, this is the first time I've ever heard that one. I mean, I can see where it could make some sense, but it's like one of 30 things that you could say are the central tenets that it, without that it could
I didn't say it's the only central tenet, but if you're prepared to say the idea that God punishes people by darkening their skin is abhorrent and anathema, you must reject that book.
Okay, I'm trying to follow you. So if that does not make sense, then the Book of Mormon falls at that point.
I think there are a zillion reasons why it falls in terms of historically and, the whole DNA problem with the Native Americans. Right. There are a zillion reasons why that falls, but I think the most abhorrent reason why that falls, why the Book of Mormon fails, and why Mormonism is basically empirically true or untrue. The philosophical answer to that is, or at least to me, the most devastating philosophical answer is, it's pure evil to say that God punishes people by darkening their skin. And that is the core of that book.
Would you say that you're saying that the most offensive thing about the Book of Mormon is that it teaches that God punishes people by darkening their skin? You would say that it's the most offensive thing that comes out of the Book of Mormon?
Absolutely, yes. Yes. Particularly nowadays when we have a perfectly good explanation of why that happens, you know, regarding vitamin D and, you know, needing lighter skin so that the melanin can absorb, you know, it's so ridiculous on top of everything else. It's just, you know, and I don't think Joseph Smith was evil. I like Joseph. He is, I think, one of the great characters in all of history. And I think what he was just doing, I don't condemn him. I think what he was doing is they came from a Bible culture when they come over here and they see these people here. What the heck? We have to explain this because the Bible mentions nothing about them. And he came up with something, you know, that I think was a bit of a ripoff. If you know all of the other manuscripts that were floating around and ideas. But that idea also, which was a very terribly racist idea, was very prevalent among people in the Americas at that time. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to kind of go off of what we were talking about. You said that the Book of Mormon's got some challenges to it, the racism issues, and that you were talking about Joseph Smith. If you were to walk up to an active Mormon today and they started having doubts, what exactly would you do to help their deconversion on the fast track? What sort of things would you tell them?
I would simply recommend to them B.H. Roberts' studies in the Book of Mormon. Say, check it out. Look at what they knew. Look at what he knew back in whatever it was, 1919 or wherever it was. There were serious problems with this, and they've known it for the longest time. And now, you know, if you want to start looking at the empirical stuff, I mean, even the most honest, you know, people who know the archaeology, who know that the fields have been scoured for the chariots and the swords and the million battles and blah, blah, blah. And they've looked into whether you can, you know, was it feasible to reproduce in the numbers that they've got? Everything is against it. And when you look back and you say, well, gee, that was a pretty common theory that the Native Americans were part of the Lost Tribes. It just doesn't, you know, if you want to be that, you know, in the group for cultural reasons, great. But if you want, you know, the truth, I think you got to go elsewhere.
Okay, another element that shows up in Mr. Deity that I particularly like is your Christology, the way you portray Jesus Christ. I see some strong Mormon theological, I don't know, background there.
Yeah, probably because it isn't Trinitarian, clearly.
Right.
The Mormon Godhead, the Mr. Deity Godhead is much more traditional Mormon in that regard. And almost has to be. There's no way to portray the Trinity on film without having two separate persons play those roles with separate identities and separate, you know, wants. Because you have to have, you know, one of the things that anyone will tell you in good drama is you have to have conflict. So you can't have that kind of oneness of the traditional Trinitarian thing. So, yeah, it's very valuable to go lean more towards the Mormon ideal of not the three in one and one in three, but three separate beings.
So now you're
we haven't ever addressed the Holy Ghost, which people are bugging out on. They want to know if Larry is the Holy Ghost, and he's not. there is an episode planned in the future to do something with that, but it's driving people crazy right now, and I love it. So
now you have chosen to sort of portray Jesus Christ, who I think you normally call Jesse.
Jesse Jesus is how I write him now when we write it.
He's kind of a frat boy.
He is. You know, when we were shooting the first episode, Sean Douglas is a fantastic actor. He's trained. He's been in films with James Woods and, you know, big people. He's done stuff. And he was in my first movie, and I said to him, will you play Jesus? And he was very hesitant to do it. And I got him to come in, and we did that first episode. And the note that I gave him that finally had him getting the character was, you're not my first choice. That in essence, that first conversation that I have with him in Mr. Deedy and the Really Big Favor is a casting call, as it were, and he's about the 10th guy that I've seen, and the 10 other guys that I offered it to that I really liked, they just said no when I showed him that picture of the crucifixion. And you know, he's a guy who's stepped up, so what's Mr. Deedy gonna do? So that's pretty much the dynamic in that relationship. And now Mr. Deity's warming up to him and trying to make him more of his boy, you know.
Now there's another interesting dynamic that I don't know where this doesn't really have anything to do with Mormonism, I suppose, but Lucy is an on again, off again love interest of Mr. Deity. Is that right?
Yeah, they were apparently some kind of, you know, no one knows what a love interest means in this Mr. Deity world, because there we haven't seen anything like kissing or holding hands or anything like that. The most we had them do once was sitting on a couch together. But yeah, it's kind of Mr. Deity's on again, off again girlfriend, which again has a very Mormon flavor to it. If God has wives or, you know, one wife or many, in the Mormon universe. And how does a God deal with that kind of on top of running the universe? That's not a big enough hassle. Now he's got to have a relationship with a woman. Holy mackerel.
And that's a platform for a reoccurring theme that I see, which is the misogyny. It's one that you come back to again and again, that's implied in the scriptures and in the Bible.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? It's one of those things where I hate to say this, but it's really fun to write that stuff. Because, you know, anyone who's battled with a woman, any man who's battled with a woman has some baggage. And probably, you know, there's something awful in me that kind of gets out in that stuff because I enjoy getting to bring up that stuff. Now, I am a feminist. I mean, I would consider myself a feminist, and not in that kind of great show years ago called Sledgehammer, with this Dirty Harry-like detective who he a gun at him, and he says, you wouldn't shoot a woman, and he shoots her, and he says, call me a feminist. I'm not a feminist in that way, but I do very much believe in the equality of women, and I'm horrified. You know, what you see today in Islam is what has been the case throughout, you know, the Judeo-Christian world. If you extract the kind of post-Enlightenment thinking of the last, you know, 300 years, that's the way it was for them. And some of the stuff, I love to have Mr. Deity be so callous about, you know, we had one where they're talking about the woman's cycle and they're putting them away in tents. And Mr. Lucy's all offended by it. And Mr. Deity says, just think of it as a really big burqa. it's that kind of, I mean, I just read a whole thing on clitorectomies and how women in the you know, Islamic world are having their vaginas sewn shut for the most part. And I mean, it's just what women have gone through in the name of God is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I'm just thankful I have a penis. Can I say penis on the show?
Yeah, okay? You can say penis.
All right.
So Brian, can you give us kind of a sneak preview on some of the future episodes? I mean, are you going to have interesting characters like some of the old Bible prophets, or are you going to slip in an Elohim reference maybe?
Well, we have Lucy refers to him every now and then as El. So that's already kind of gotten in there. We have an episode coming up in the next 4 weeks that I think is one of the most clever things I've ever written, if I can say so myself. It's about the creation of time and nothingness, which has to occur for Mr. Deity because he wants to be the big G God. And it's done. It's in the can, so I've seen it, and it kills me. And I generally, when I really like something that I've done, everybody else likes it. So, or at least the fan base really likes it. That's a good one. We have one coming up with John the Baptist. Of course, it's just the head. Because they still can't find the body. Mr. Deity's not willing to turn on his own knowingness to find it. Let's see, what else do we have one? Your fan base will love this. We have one coming up called Mr. Deity and the New Kid, which is about Joseph Smith. He gets to make an appearance on the show. He's got some brilliant ideas for the end times, and then he ends up getting Deity in a lot of trouble.
I notice a kind of a theme in this, and I don't know if this is a correct portrayal. It kind of speaks to a lot of corporate behavior and kind of the shuffling of work between middle management and upper management.
Yes, very much so. Yes, and even. Pawning off responsibilities on the subordinates. We have an episode called Mr. Deity and the Therapist that we have yet to shoot, where Lucy and Mr. Deity go into therapy, and her big problem with Mr. Deity is that he won't take responsibility for all the evil, that he allowed. He pawns it off on her, she's not very happy about that. So, yeah, the corporate thing was very big, I think, the first and second seasons. I think we've lost a little of that edge, and that comes back more in the longer versions of the show, which we haven't shot or anything.
Well, again,
that's something I wanted to keep in mind at all times.
Yeah, that's something that still rings very true from a Mormon background, where Mormonism is very top down and very heavily layered. And the Larry character, he's right out of the Church Handbook of Instruction, I believe.
Sure. Sure. He's the second counselor if there ever was one.
So how has this been received? I mean, we know it's out there. Tell us a little bit about the rolling out process. I know for a while you were backed by Sony. Is that right?
Yeah. What happened was we rolled out in January of 07, '07, as I like to say. And we put three episodes up, and they got a fair amount of hits. But what happened was, I think it was on Dig. Somebody mentioned it, and then it started getting a whole lot of hits, and then YouTube moved it to the front page, and it just kind of went crazy from there. And by March, we were talking with all companies about doing it or doing something with it. Mosaic wanted to do a motion picture. Sony wanted to do it as a web series for their new Crackle. And we ended up going with Sony and did the second season on Sony's Crackle exclusively, although they did allow it to go on iTunes. And kind of decided at the end of that, it was a good idea for us to part ways. And we just decided to go back on our own. And now we're supported solely by, subscriptions and donations. And, people have been coming through. I'm doing this pretty much full time now, and I'm not having to do all that much other work to keep in the black. And we have more projects. Like I said, I'm working on a book right now, and we're going to be putting out a DVD at the end of season three with 20 or 22 episodes. We might hold off a few episodes just to put them only on the DVD so that people will have to buy. They will just have to.
Wow, excellent. That's... Are you gonna have any bonus features just to tease it out with the DVD?
Yeah, we're gonna have all the Larry Deity stuff. We started doing something this year called the Larry Deity interviews, which was kind of a take on the Frost Nixon stuff. And we did 10 of those. which were just mildly received. I was very disappointed in that, but we did a trailer for that as well. Then we're going to do commentaries on all of the things, and there's probably going to be a little mockumentary about the making of Mr. Deity, kind of a backstory that's complete BS, but fun.
Brian, is there anything that I guess you could get a do-over on that you've put out there for Mr. Deity? Is there anything that I guess was not well received or maybe stirred up a little bit too much of the wrong kind of?
There are a couple of episodes. I did the first episode we did with Sony. It was called Mr. Deity and the Intel, which featured a call from Mr. Deity to George Bush pre-Iraq War, which was basically Mr. Deity talking Bush into the Iraq War, which I thought was kind of like took some heat off of Bush, and people ended up really getting ticked off that I just played up every classic Bush stereotype and that. And so I kind of got the idea, let's not do politics. The other one that I got a lot of heat for was Mr. Deity and the Woman, where we had Mr. Deity creating a woman. And the intent of it, in my thinking, the way I wrote it, was that I thought it would be funny if even Mr. Deity couldn't understand women, because none of us here on the planet can, who do have that thing that I mentioned earlier that starts with
That's
P.
Perfect.
That would have been great.
People got really upset by that episode. We did one more that had kind of like a male-female thing to it. By the way, no one got upset at the male Mr. Deity and the Man, which was the creation of Adam and how he had to sign off on a whole list of things that were going to come his way if I created a wife for him, which was strange. I got no hassle on that.
Yeah, and the final sign-off form was, well, look, this is what the model looks like.
Right.
Okay, I'm in.
And here's the rear view. He shows him the rear view.
Yeah.
I think what people like best about the show is when I stick to, kind of more theological, biblical things. We have some other episodes coming up. We're gonna do some where Mr. Deity converts to Islam. Mr. Deity and Jesse convert to Islam. That's gonna be one. We have Stunt Jesus coming up. This whole thing gets kind of vetted because Amy is a Lutheran and she's a believer. And so, she's pretty liberal. She'd be in the Sunstone dialogue group, you know, if they had one for Lutherans. But she was raised Missouri Synod, and Jimbo until recently was religious, and Sean is kind of doesn't know where he is on all the thing. So I kind of roll these out and they vet them. On Mr. Deity in the Plains, which was about 9/11, Jimbo really came at me saying, this is harsh, man. This is really harsh. And I had to go back and when I was writing it, I watched like 3 hours of 9/11 footage from the day. I wanted to make sure that I was being respectful to the thing, but it wasn't really about 9/11. It was about the ideas have about how God saves some and he doesn't save others, and the notion of miracles, which really puts God in a bad spot, and it was all about that. But I got some heat on that one too, that you know, 9/11 is sacrosanct, which is funny to me because the people who love that show, you're kind of buying into, if God isn't sacrosanct, nothing is. How do they not get that? But that's what I end up with.
So I caught your interview or your speech that you gave before the AAI conference in 2009.
Yes.
Have you found yourself now becoming more and more a spokesman for the skeptic crowd?
Yeah, I just did a speech in San Diego, and I have more coming up for various conferences. I'm really ticked that they didn't invite me to Melbourne, Australia, in March, but I'm gonna forgive them. They're showing one of my episodes to everybody, so. I'm just going to be happy with that at this point, but I do see it as kind of one of my missions. I want people to rethink the religion thing. I think it had its value in our history as a people. I think that value has been surpassed, and I think we know enough now about the world and the way it works that it's actually a dangerous thing, religion in general. And we're seeing that with Islam. And I think what people in this country don't want to see is that Islam today is really just Christianity 500 years ago before the persuasive influence of reason and enlightenment that hit, and before there was a government that guaranteed freedom of religion, freedom of thought, freedom of speech, all these freedoms, which, quite frankly, we have had to fight religion to get for 2,000 years. So, it's become one of my missions here at this point.
Yeah, I was curious what if you see a time in the foreseeable future where you're going to run out of topics, or do you go to the general things happening in society, and are you going to start commenting on current events, or are you just keeping? I mean, it sounds like you're going bouncing all over the place, and you're making up some things. But how many years do you think you can keep this thing running?
It's interesting because when you're proposing to do a TV show, you have to make up something called the book, which is a 5-year plan for the show, where you outline pretty much everything that's going to come up in that 5-year plan. And that would be for a half hour show. There is no end of stuff because we got this great source that's really thick and long, and it has a lot of great stuff in it. If you're looking for, sources of story and humor and that kind of thing, just the first season of Mr. Didi, the half hour show would take from before the creation. We were thinking about it either as from before the creation till just after Adam and Eve, or from before the creation to the flood, which is very far into Genesis. There is so much stuff there that can be done, and I am constantly, like this last episode that we threw up, Mr. Deity in the Promised Land, was largely inspired by I listened to an interview between my old buddy Dennis Prager and Sam Harris, where Prager said some of the most outrageous stuff I'd ever heard in my life. And I was aghast. And I was like, really? Is this? And I just had to do an episode about it. So I don't think, we did a little snippet about Pat Roberts and his stupid comment about Haiti and a deal with the devil. There's no end of people saying stupid stuff about God that we can go in or just, not stupid stuff, but stuff that's really important to people, and people come out and have, other ideas. There's just no end to any of this. I can't imagine it. I can imagine getting sick of doing it at a certain point, but I don't think the material, I don't think I'm ever going to run out of material.
Well, it seems to me with a lot of biblical content and stuff that evangelists and, I don't know, apologists are saying today, you can just say it verbatim, play it straight without even changing it.
Well, I started writing, we were going to do an iPhone app, which I'm not sure if we're going to do that now because a lot of that material is going into a book. Things I figured out is in writing these little bits, which are now Mr. Didi's diary bits, they're like little diary entries. One of the best sources for me is to go to sites that have Christian apologetics and just pick a topic, because some of the stuff they say there is so ridiculous. That inspired Mr. Deity and the Virgin, which was the first show that we did this season, where, Larry comes running in saying, they're going to kill a girl. Why? Because she's not a virgin. And Mr. Deity goes, oh, well, if she's not a virgin, it's not just the material. It's the stuff that people say about the material. And the stuff that people have said about the material, it's never ending. I mean, you can just go read books on the material. And somewhere in there, you're going to find something to inspire at least a 3 to 5 minute, let alone a half hour show.
It almost feels like at some point, Comedy Central is going to get you. I could just see you going on with John Daly and debating him, and you being in character as Mr. Deity, and that would just be a classic. I'd love to see the two of you go after each other.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun to be had in interviews or in any of that kind of, you know, I loved the Larry Deity interview stuff that we did is some of my favorite material. It was so heartbreaking that people just kind of went, yeah, whatever. because, you know, it had so much just fun content. It was a little less theologically oriented, you know, but it was so much fun. You know, stuff about the lamb laying down with the lion and how, you know, they tried that and addressed the lion ate the lamb. And, you know, I say, and I should add one note, I don't care who tells you, you know, to do it, even if the deity tells you to do it himself, do not mess with a lion when it's eating. And then I say to Larry, I know you had to learn that the hard way, but, you know, that kind of stuff, I thought it was just so much fun and it's a little, but it's, I guess my audience really does want kind of the meat. I, when I spoke in San Diego, I gave part of my speech was about how, people who say this is a Christian nation, in my opinion, they're wrong because the question is not what faith did the founding fathers have or not have. That's, you know, all of, people have debated that for years. The question is, what kind of society did they set up? And if you look at the Bill of Rights, there's nothing Christian in those Bill of Rights. It's a hardcore secular society that most of the principles in there had to be fought. Religion would never have allowed those and didn't when it had power. When Christianity had power, they didn't allow those rights. And then I gave a lot of speech about that and about how the society that Christianity created when they had power were Taliban like places that we would never want to live. And one of the questions I got is, well, where do we get this kind of stuff? Where in fact the person said, where do we get the raw meat like this? So I guess there's, what Larry has figured out is there's a lot more of a, not Larry, not Larry, Jimbo has figured out there's a lot more of a need for that. So we're actually going to be making a video as well, probably an hour to an hour and a half video, you know, with my beliefs about that kind of stuff. Cause people, my crowd, I guess, just really likes that part of it. And I think it's such an important thing now. I mean, 9/11 was a real wake up call. I think for a lot of people, in this community, they saw this and they went, see? And for the first time, I think they had the ears of people who had shut their ears and said, come on, what harm can it do? You know, it's helping people out. Well, okay, but there's a terrible price to be paid. And the price is to be paid when more people take it seriously. If they're just casual about their religion, it's never a threat, but when the more seriously they take it, the more dangerous it is to the rest of us. And so, you know, I think there's a big clamoring for that, as is evidenced by books like, you know, The God Delusion and the Sam Harris book and The God Is Not Great, Christopher Hitchens and stuff like that. Books like that 15 years ago would not have sold in those numbers. I can't remember the numbers for Dawkins' book, but it's astounding. It's never happened in the history of publishing that an atheist book like that had so many sales.
I think a lot of the success of your show has to do with lampooning religion, but more specifically showing how absurd religion is in general, and how basically we've moved past a lot of what is taught in the Bible.
Right. We have dropped so much of it, and not because God told us to, you know, it's because we've looked around and we've said, you know what, that's some Bronze Age tribalism right there. Let's chuck that. We can't deal with that in the modern world. And, you know, I think I don't think religion is absurd. I think this is one of the areas where I have something to offer that Dawkins and Dennett and Harris and Hitchens don't quite get. I was deeply religious. I understand that urge, that almost compulsion. I get that. I you know, I had religious visions, you know, on April 6th after a day of General Conference. I know what that's about, and I don't. And I think this is one of the reasons why religious people can endure this show is because I try never to stomp on that or make fun of that, because that's serious stuff. People need to find meaning. People need to find value. People need to ask the questions of what is good and what is right and how do we know this stuff? How do we find it out? I just don't think religion is the answer. So, but I have such profound respect for the people who are into that and take that stuff seriously, because in this day and age, it is way too easy to just fall into apathy and nihilism and go, what the hell, who cares?
Yeah, I think you have a common thread. I mean, you and Shermer, I mean, because Shermer, you know, he was a very religious person.
He and I have such similar backgrounds in that arena, even to the extent that we both loved biking when we were younger. He still is a biking nut.
Yeah.
That's very much why I fell in love with his organization, because it does not dismiss people as being stupid or being, it's those answers are too easy. There are profound reasons why people find religion and God and it speaks to those things and you cannot dismiss that and write it off and in my mind be taken seriously. I think Dawkins in his writing does a much better job of kind of getting that when he has to really sit and think about what he's saying instead of, you know, flying off the cuff in a live speech. He's hard to bear even for me on that end. But when I read him, I go, oh, okay, here's a guy who at least slightly gets that because he grew up Anglican and, you know, he had that. But I think he had a much worse experience with his religious upbringing. And I think a lot of people who do go into the atheist way, I always say there's three kinds of every, there's a believer and non-believer. There's the angry atheist, the emotional, that's what I call it, the emotional atheist or believer. There's the habitual believer or non-believer, and the reasoned believer, non-believer. And I think a lot of the atheist community, just as much probably as the religious community, is motivated by emotional reasons, having bad experiences with religion and whatnot. And I don't dismiss those as I don't dismiss the emotional religious person, because it does religion and no one likes the idea that that this may not have some grand intrinsic meaning that we're down here, because we're suffering like hell. You know, we're living in a paradise, basically, compared to 5,000 years ago. So, you know, and we even feel that this is a little cruel and harsh. So I get that people needed something more than this. And I would like there to be more, too. On many occasions I've said, I hope I'm wrong about, you know, because I am an atheist, but in many regards, I hope I'm wrong. I would love to have the, you know, living forever thing with my loved ones, not necessarily my family. As the, you know, that was one of my strongest arguments, by the way, of getting out of Mormonism. I've got to be with my family forever. Holy crud. They never met my parents, you know. But that kind of stuff, those are serious issues.
Well, I definitely think that the show has a lot to offer for both believers and non-believers, and a lot of things to think about. And I think the show brilliantly, as you say, you know, skirts the line and gives people something to chew on. Let's see, your website is MrDeity.com, and you can go there and check out the shows and make a donation. I'm glad to hear you're being supported in your work. That's great news.
Yeah, people are great. People amaze me.
And, of course, you can check it out on YouTube and iTunes and just probably every other media outlet out there.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who repost or what do they call that? Embed. They embed the show. Yeah.
All right, Brian, it's been really wonderful to talk to you. We appreciate you coming on, and it's been an enjoyable discussion.
Great talking to you guys. I hope I didn't offend anyone too much.
I don't think so.
My goal is just to offend a little.
All right. As always, you can follow up with the conversation at our website at MormonExpression.com or drop us an email at mail@MormonExpression.com.